Hello, I am Amanda Wacker.
Hola, I am Lenise Castro.
Sawadee ka, I'm Asama Lekpua.
And we are the Triplicates. Welcome to the second season, eighth episode of the Triplicates podcast. We are three first-gen women of color getting our PhD at the University of California, San Diego.
Okay, WWE announcer, I see.
So you wanted to be like, what was it, like rap battle announcer?
Oh, I don't remember ever saying that, but I totally would. Anyways. Lenise.
Sorry.
Last episode, we checked in with you guys about how winter quarter was going thus far. It's been a roller coaster, but anyways.
Yes, mostly downhill.
Yes.
It's been like the luge for me.
The luge.
What does that mean?
Because it's Winter Olympic season.
I love that. Mm-hmm.
Are you just I think it's one of those things where you're just like lying down and it's like slippery and you're going super fast and you can't see where you're going. But then you're like, I hope this journey takes me to the finish.
I barely have time to breathe this quarter, I think.
I saw this tweet by Katie Mack. She was talking about the world, but she said it feels like being stuck in a jar, like you're a spider stuck in a jar and it's just constantly being shaken. But that's how I feel. I'm just a spider in a jar and it's just like
you're constantly being vortexed.
Same.
Yeah. Ooh, we love a vortex.
Anyways, that's an update on an update.
On an update.
On an update.
Yes.
But this episode.
Let's regroup. Yes. So we wanted to take a deep dive into each of our journeys. Lenise is eating a snack. Really, she thinks she's so slick.
Eating during the episode.
Well, she's like the guest of honor, so that's okay. We'll let it slide. But on that note, we wanted to talk about how Lenise got interested in science, how her journey has been, all that stuff.
Yes.
So, Lenise.
Yes,
who
Amanda.
Are you?
Oh, God.
What a question. Yeah. I'm Lenise.
Hi, nice to meet you. So great to have you on the show.
Say your full name with all the accents.
My name is Francisco Rivera. That's his full name. Oh, no. My name is Lenise Keila Castro. That is how my parents call me. Yes. That's me.
Sounds like a princess name.
A Leo sun.
I am.
Cancer rising? Sagittarius moon? Was that what? Are you a Cancer moon?
That feels wrong.
I don't remember what I told you. I did.
No, I think I'm a Cancer rising. I'm sensitive.
That's true.
I'm going to look on my co-star.
Anyways.
Give me a second. I know. We'll start. Hold on.
It's the year of the tiger and Lenise was also born. Yeah.
It's my year, bitches.
Yeah, which means she's 24.
Oh, I can't say that word.
It's okay. I'll just mark it explicit.
I am a Leo sun, Virgo moon, Cancer rising.
Cancer rising. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Virgo. Anyways.
Wow.
Thank you, parents. Speaking of parents.
Yeah. Let's talk about your childhood.
My childhood is, it's like any childhood would be, I guess.
That's kind what you of. Think.
Yeah. I know.
It's like everyone has a different childhood.
Yeah,
that is true.
What's your family dynamic like? Like, what are the members of your immediate family?
So a large portion of my childhood, it was in the household that I lived in was like me, my dad, my mom, my brother. And we also lived with my grandma, my grandpa, and my aunt. And that was largely because, my grandpa, my grandma, my mom, and my dad, actually. Well, yeah, I am a daughter of immigrants. Immigrated from Mexico at different times and ended up in Norwalk, California. And because of that, I don't know, we're also like a Mexican family and it just tends to kind of all stick together. I grew up with both my parents working. So my grandma, my grandpa, who I don't call grandma, grandpa, which is why I'm struggling to say those words. I call them Nana and Tata.
Yeah.
Are like my second parents. They took care of me. Before school, after school, until my parents came home.
Yeah.
my parents would send me and my brother off to Mexico with them because they didn't have childcare, but my grandparents wanted to go to Mexico and visit their home.
Yeah.
So a lot of my summers were spent just roaming the small town my mom was from, which was Isla de los Hervores in Michoacán. So I have very fond memories of Mexico. And I haven't been, at least to where my mom's from in... I went when I was 12. I turned 12 there and that was the last time. So 11 years.
Wow.
It's been a long time. I'm hoping to go next year. Assuming the pandemic, Lovato is like not too bad.
With your family?
Yeah, my mom and my dad usually go for, they have fiestas, like a patron saint of the town. I've never been and I've always wanted to go.
That sounds cute.
And see like family and friends that I have there that I remember from when I was little. Just want to go. I don't know. Yeah. It's been so long. They're all old. I want to go and see them at least one more time, you know?
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
Oh, so would you say that your parents and also your grandparents were sort of like your mentors or your role models growing up? Who else? Who else was in little Lanise's life?
Yeah. Well, first off, yeah, I think my grandparents and my parents had a lot to do with how I grew up and having goals really early on. Like, till this day, my dad, I mean, my brother's still in school, and I mean, technically, I'm still in school. Grad school's a little different. is always, like, school comes first. Yeah. Like, anything and everything, he'd, like, throw down whatever he was doing to help us. So I think from a young age, like many first gen, school was very important. Like being a goal oriented first daughter of immigrants was something that was instilled in me early on. I could not even dream about getting a B in a class, like stuff like that, right? Yeah. Like I was a first cousin on both sides. So a lot of like the responsibility of like putting this standard or like this like bar up rested on my shoulders, which I think had its negative and positive like consequences and benefits. But it did, I mean, I'm largely why I do well in school and why I've gotten to where I am is because my dad and my mom were so involved in my education. And that being said, I went to a predominantly, I mean, Norwalk and the schools that I went to were predominantly Latino. And we all know schools that are predominantly anything other than white don't ever usually get well-funded.
Yeah.
I had the benefit of our school district being small in comparison to like LAUSD, which is huge, right? So we did later on in my education get some better programs. Like we were PLTW.
What does that mean?
Which is like Project Lead the Way. And it was like programs focused on getting people into, I think it was engineering was their main focus. But once I got into high school, the programs expanded. It's just, it started too late for me to really get reap the benefits, I guess. It was a year below me that got it. But that being said, I get a lot of stories from people about their K through 12 education and like them being kind of negative and like teachers putting them down in a way. It's common, right? I don't know if it was because I was from a predominantly Latino high area, but I was often like, oh, I'm like the school knows me and my brother as, oh, the Castro siblings. Yeah. Like they're the good ones, which has its like, I don't know. It's weird, right? Like a weird dynamic.
Wow,
like
we were held at a standard.
Yeah.
Of course.
It's like
star power.
I got good grades, so I would say I did receive some maybe not favoritism, but people knew that like, oh, she's gonna make it. You know, a lot of times it's like, oh, she's gonna get through, she's gonna be the one. And I think some of the mentors that I got were because of that, but also some of the mentors were just because I just happened to find good people in the education system I was in. So yeah, I think I first really got into science, other than my parents being like, you're going to be a doctor. In middle school, I was on a robotics team. Little old me wanted to make robots out of Lego. Shout out Miss Garcia.
It was first. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. She follows me on Twitter. I'm sure you'll see this episode. Maybe. And she's part of the PLTW program that's mm-hmm. like a bit more prominent in my school district now.
What does it mean to be on a robotics team? Like, what did that involve at that level?
We like built robots out of Legos and programmed them and then took them and competed at like USC. USC was the first time I stepped foot on a college campus. Funny, right?
How old were you?
Middle school. So what would that be? 12? No, that's the end of elementary.
Yeah, like, 10 through maybe 11. 19.
Yeah. I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah. So that was fun. I also, Miss Gunderson was like the first time I was introduced to the scientific method. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of like where I started kind of dabbling into science, but I didn't really have a concept of what science could be or like what doing science really meant, nor would I have that for a long time.
Yeah.
In terms of just going to school and having a support system, even from elementary school, I still keep in contact with so many of my teachers, like Mr. DeVoe was like my fourth grade teacher, and I still talk to him. Like, we met up in Boston when I was doing my my internship.
He moved
at MIT.
To Boston?
He's from like the East Coast. So he was visiting family and he was like, "Hey, I'm going to be in the area. Let's have lunch." And it's like nice to kind of like look back at it. Mm-hmm. Like, he went to my graduation, my high school graduation and everything. Yeah. Wow. And then in high school, just generally, Miss Wong. Shout out to Mama Wong. I still visit my high school, Mr. Lee's. There's like so many people, I think, that just believed in me as a person. And that was very helpful because I love words of affirmation. I still do. So I think I was lucky in the sense that I had a support system growing up young. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what supported me to like continue in my education and pursue a degree. There was no way I wasn't going to go to college. Like,
yeah.
That was always like a must, I guess, in my family. But yeah, in high school, though, I think is when I actually started to take a deep dive into science. Okay. And it stemmed from something that started in my childhood. I live in Norwalk, which is right next to Long Beach, where the Aquarium of the Pacific, you know,
I follow them on TikTok.
I do too. They're so nice. I didn't realize that aquariums can be like indoor, outdoor. Mm-hmm. Because I've only been to aquariums like, I guess, in Boston or even in Thailand. Because like when it's too hot or when it's too cold, they're like, let's make everything indoor. Yeah, so you have like a full immersive experience. Yeah. And then when I went to the one in Long Beach, it's like, okay, the penguins are indoor. And then you're going to go see like some birds outdoor. I'm making this up.
Oh.
But basically, you're just
like...
She's lying. No. But there are like different levels. And then you're indoor, then you're outdoor, then you're indoor. And I'm like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. It's so nice. Mm-hmm. It's nice to feel like the sun on your face.
Yeah. I grew up there. Like, I grew up going... when my parents would have weekends off, like, they take us to the aquarium.
That's cute.
And it started off like just as a curiosity when I was young. Mm-hmm. And then in high school, I was in this other program. It was called Millennium. And to like stay in the program, you had to have volunteer hours. So I was like, what am I going to volunteer in? And I stumbled across this program called Volunteens, and it was a program for teenage volunteers at the aquarium. And you'd go and work like a shift, like it wasn't a full shift, but a shift at the aquarium. And you'd work stations. So we would have, I think, 2 weekends where they just gave us all the information about like every single exhibit in the aquarium. So you were jam-packed with all this information. You had packets that you could look back at. You learned like how to work with people too is another thing that they taught us. It was, I think, Volunteens 101 or something. Shout out to Raylene. She's no longer there, but she was like my boss essentially when I was at Volunteens. And yeah, I ended up volunteering there that, I think fall maybe, I was only there for a little while, but I ended up liking it so much that I became a mentor for the program. Oh, so cute. I just continued volunteering at their program, like all throughout high school.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be a mentor there? Were you like coaching other volunteers?
Yeah. So there's, there's volunteers. And then, I think right after the year after I did it, they started taking on mentors for the volunteers. So essentially you just had to have gone through the program, I believe, and know what it took. So I would be the one running the Volunteen 101. I would be the one walking the halls, making sure that the making sure that the volunteers were at their stations. We did 30 minute shifts. So you had to make sure everyone is moving. We were there to answer questions. We were the ones that they essentially answered to. I made schedules. I walked around with a radio. I felt so cool.
Oh, I would love a radio.
Yeah.
Oh my God, what I would do for a radio.
Like, excuse me. So-and-so, what's your 10 for? It was so fun. I had so, I felt like, and I was only like maybe a year older than these kids. And oftentimes I was younger than most of them.
Yeah. Which is but you had experience.
Yeah. We always kept my age a secret because I was young. I had a lot of power. I was on a little power trip.
This is a tangent, but I never understood why. Like, so there's this ice cream place near my high school that everyone just like goes to. And when, you know, like some Karen is complaining about something, she'll be like, where's your manager? And then the manager would like walk by and she's like, legit 16. And I'm like, worker 15, manager 16. Incredible.
Yeah, but imagine like worker 16 and manager 14. That
I feel like that sometimes happens. Like it depends on like how early you got started. It's not by like your actual age, but it's like how long you've been there. Yeah. And they also had a walkie-talkie, so.
Again, I would do anything for a walkie-talkie.
It's so fun. I loved it. It was my favorite part of the job. Yeah. Well, outside of like the science and the people and
the animals.
No, but yeah, like I fell in love with marine bio there. I think I was surrounded by it every weekend.
Yeah.
And it's like I gave up an entire Saturday or Sunday or whatever I worked to be there. And it didn't feel like work. I truly did enjoy it. I do like talking to people. I think generally I can be very shy, but in that job, I wasn't like, I don't know. I think that's one of the few times that I felt very confident in my knowledge about something.
Yeah.
Especially science. Aww. And so I could freely talk to people and like communicate a scientific topic, right? Technically, marine bio, to like all age groups, like be it like people that were much senior me, but also like to little kids and explaining like how sea stars work or what jellies are and how they're not actually fish and that's why we don't call them jellyfish. And they're like, what? Or like connecting it back to just something that they'd understand. Yeah. And I think that was also not only my first experience of being of like marine bio and learning about science in that way, but also being a science communicator.
Yes. Literally communicating science all day.
So I really liked it. I mean, I would love to go. We should go back. I like visiting people. And yeah, I ended up volunteering there for 4 years. And then I even went back once I got into college for a paid position. And then I was a science, like an educator, I think.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it was nice to get paid for
what
I was already kind of doing as volunteer.
Yeah.
But did you have to walkie-talkie?
I did. So then that one, it was so for my volunteer position, we shared a walkie-talkie. But when I got paid, we all got walkie-talkies.
Oh my gosh. Wow. The best perk.
And I got to do shows. So like there's certain shows like a sea lion show where we talk about how they're mammals and like differences between sea lions and seals.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
We've heard.
I love heard in the middle of the ocean where the kayaking tour guide was like, does anyone know? And Lanisha was like, I know 20 of them.
I can tell you 8 different ways to tell them apart.
I can.
That was perfect.
So it was really fun. I mean, I know how it had its perks. Like, I've hugged a penguin. Yeah, I've touched an octopus. Mm-hmm. I've swam in their tropical Pacific tank, mm-hmm. Where like the rays are and the sharks are.
Wow, yeah. That's so fun.
It was so fun. I was so scared, but it was so fun. Yeah, and I really loved it there. So I think that's when I think back of my aha moment. Mm-hmm. It's not that aha, but mm-hmm. it's like when I kind of really did like science and was first intrigued.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not in the backyard building a telescope. Yeah, it's something that I recently heard, right? Like it's something mm-hmm. that I learned later in mm-hmm. my years. Mm-hmm. I wasn't learning or reading science papers when I was 10. I was at the aquarium.
Cute.
Looking for the most public way to learn science.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, any other questions?
Okay, so you're in high school. I'm in high school. Like, Lanice is going to college. Lanice goes to college. Lanice goes to UCLA. Mm-hmm. Did you apply to, like, on purpose, stay close to home? Like, what was that decision process like?
Yeah, I think I wanted to stay close to home. I applied pretty broadly. Thankfully, here in California, we have not only the Cal State system, mm-hmm. but also the UC system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had quite a few colleges to choose from if I wanted to stay close to home. Mm-hmm. You know, to be a rebel, I did apply like to a couple out of state. But also like I couldn't afford out of state tuition.
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of things that kind of fed into where I applied and mm-hmm. where I chose to go. Mm-hmm. I applied very broadly in the Cal State and the UC system. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to stay close to home. And also just tuition was cheaper. I applied to a couple privates, but the difference between a UC tuition mm-hmm. And a private is mm-hmm. like pretty significant.
Yeah.
How did you know about the UC system or like the Cal State system? Because it seems like, I guess to me, for an out-of-state person, like how do you even navigate that? There's so many schools. Yeah. There's so many like types of admissions, types of programs. Mm-hmm. I also have heard that some people do like transfer between schools. Mm-hmm. Did you have like a pretty robust like guidance program in high school, or how did you learn about college as a first gen?
I think in terms of like high school, they were pretty good at having, like we had a counselor specifically for college counseling. Mm-hmm. And we had, at my high school, they still do it, and I've gone to it a couple times, like an alumni day where they invite alumni to come speak about their college experience, like how they got into college, how it's going. Mm. And just generally, I think even in middle school, the idea of college was always kind of mentioned. Mm-hmm. How to do well in college, probably not as robustly melted into us. Mm-hmm. But I kind of knew that what it entailed applying to college and like going to college was good. Mm-hmm. That I knew. That is like always mm-hmm. had been told to us where I went to school. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think the UC system and the Cal State system, we were well educated because in that like college counseling, we had like an office, like they talked about each of those.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. And like this UC, these are the UCs, these are Cal States, and like you could go here and they're near. But mm-hmm. in terms of what each UC had to offer, like mm-hmm. specific details, I don't think there was as much information.
Yeah.
You mostly need UC Berkeley, UCLA are really good schools. Mm-hmm. You should go there. Mm-hmm. If you're doing well in school, you should apply there. Mm-hmm. Right? Wow. So I did, because I was like, I have the grades.
Yeah.
Miss Wong perfected my personal statements. Mm-hmm. Like I had she read them so much and wrote me letters of rec and everything. Mm-hmm. So there was that. Because I live so close, not that close, but close enough to UCLA, I was able to go visit UCLA. Something my school also does was you could take a college trip and they take you up mm-hmm. to the Bay.
Yeah.
and bring you back down to visit like different UC campuses and Cal State campuses. Yeah.
Did you have to pay for that?
Yeah, we did. Oh. But you can also have the option of fundraising. So I sold like chocolate boxes to pay for almost the whole thing, I think.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah, I was an entrepreneur from the start. I did capitalist. That. Stop. We have to pay for these things somehow.
What'd you say?
I was bored.
I said not a capitalist.
Oh, I was going to say like, sounds like an MLM.
Yeah, sounds like an MLM. Do you guys remember the world's finest chocolate
bars? They're so good.
Bars?
The crunchy ones?
They're so good.
The Rice
good.
Krispies? Oh, yeah. The caramel? Ooh.
But I think I paid my whole way. Oh, I forgot. In middle school, they had like a science camp and they took us to Catalina Island. I also sold chocolate bars for
I
that.
I love Catalina Island. Mm-hmm.
We should go. Together.
Yeah. I have been with my mother. She wanted to go there for her birthday and it cute. Was so hot.
It's pretty.
Okay. Regroup.
But yeah, so that's how like I knew these campuses existed and that I should go to college because my parents are like, we came here for you to get a better education.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I was going to go to college. That wasn't, I had no choice. But in terms of like choosing a school, I'm not going to lie, I did get into it. Couple colleges.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the vibes at UCLA were just cool. I went to their open house. And the thought of going to school with a rivalry was so fun to me. Is that weird?
With a what?
Like, I don't know. It just felt like hyped. Like,
wanted a rival?
Yeah. Like, going
did
to
other school not have
sports
rivals?
Games. I mean, not really. A lot of those UC schools don't have like super great. Sports camp. I just wanted, you know, the option.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to these fun games and like being super hyped. And
yeah.
I didn't really go to any sports until I went to school. I was struggling, bro.
It's okay.
But it seemed fun. I also like, I was on a good day 40 minutes away from home. So if anything really went wrong, I could just go home. And I did. Mm-hmm. There was sometimes, my first chem test, I went home and I cried into my mom's arms because I failed.
Yeah.
And it's weird going from like being a top achieving student at this predominantly Latino high school and then going to UCLA and being like, oh, everyone was the top. Like,
yeah.
What am I doing here? Not like not really feeling prepared and like I don't know how to study. Mm-hmm. Sure, I knew how to do it.
Yeah, because you kind of were chilling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I also felt like in my essay to get into these schools, I did say, oh, I want to be a doctor. And that's why I wanted to major in biology. But like, I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do, you know? Like, I was just putting that because in a lot of URM or POC households, it's like you're either a doctor, a lawyer.
There's three jobs.
Nothing else. And I didn't. I mean, math was all right, but I didn't particularly want to do that. And I didn't want to be a lawyer, although I do love to argue. My dad will tell you this.
Yeah, you and Amanda argue all the time.
I know, we do.
I love being right.
Me too.
I love sitting in the corner and just like watching it ping pong.
Oh, no.
It's fun.
It is. I agree. But I did like marine bio. How the marine bio connected to being a doctor? Don't know how. But I was like, oh,
if you're
going
to
bio,
you have to be a doctor. That's the rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously.
Obviously. So I went to undergrad.
Pre-med.
Yeah. Pre-med. I was a biology major. And I was like, so it was weird. At UCLA, there's a physical science and a life science. And if you start in the life science track, you can't switch to physical science. At the time, I was like, I want to be a doctor, but like pharmacists make a lot of money. So let me do biochemistry.
Oh my God. Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I was like, when I get out of school, I need to help
pay
for my parents' retirement.
Yeah.
Maybe even pitch in for my brother's tuition or something. You know, like finances was always like on my mind about helping my family and uplifting the community is like something that a lot of people, I feel, at least like where I'm from and people I met in college, is something that's always on our minds.
Yeah.
So I switched to biochemistry, not knowing what the heck I was getting into. And I studied biochemistry for a while, but I did eventually switch once I got into research, actually. But
Was it hard to switch majors?
No, I just emailed someone and I was like, hey, I want to switch my major. And I switched late. I switched in my junior year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But because the physical sciences all apply to life science, they were like slightly harder classes. Don't come for me. Mm-hmm. they all kind of switched over. I just had to like take maybe
that a couple hierarchy. Extra. Hierarchy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that later in social justice class.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. So, yeah, I just made the switch and then I just... My junior year was when I took upper divs anyways. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, it worked out fine. And when did you start working in a lab?
So I had no idea what scientific research was going into. Mm. I knew that there were scientists, but I had never met one. Mm-hmm. So I first learned about scientific research because when I got into UCLA, I was also sent like this email and I'm happy I saw it and I'm happy I applied because it was for this program called PEERS and it's like, I forgot what it stands for.
That's a
something
great
excellence
acronym.
In research in your studies.
Yeah.
And it's a 2-year program that starts your freshman year and goes into your sophomore year. Mm-hmm. And it's focused on getting URM students into scientific research.
Yeah.
And it came with like a lot of support. Mm-hmm. And it's why I'm so like, why isn't there support here at UCSD? Mm-hmm. But it's, I had tutoring for my math and for something else. But like math was the big thing. Like I went to a group tutoring session with the same people every quarter to make sure that I knew what I was doing in my math classes because they were hard. Mm-hmm. So that was helpful. They also gave us lab tours our freshman year. I walked that's the first time I walked in a lab.
Wow.
They also, our first year, we took a class where we learned how to college. Like, how do you study? How do you keep a schedule? Like, just stuff like that. Something that you think is intuitive, but like, it's not.
People, right? People need that.
And your sophomore year, it's about getting into a lab. Like, how do I make a CV? How do I write a cold email? How do I do this? It's so, I think they did provide us like tools in our toolbox to do what we needed to do to get into a lab. PEERS came out of the Undergraduate Research Center, which also had a summer program that you can take between your freshman and sophomore year. And it's called BICEP. And it's like with an S though, not a C. I know.
That's how Amanda would spell it.
I think it's like biomedical sciences.
That is such a funny joke.
Yeah.
I'm so funny.
But that, I guess, is the first time I held a pipette.
Yeah, like, that's cool.
Yeah, it's they taught us just like basic skills to work in a lab. So that's where I learned to run a Western. That's where I learned to run a gel. It's where I learned to do a transformation.
You still do those things today.
And at the end of it all, we had like a speed networking event with like labs that we're taking on undergrads. And I interviewed with Sam, who later became my grad student mentor in the lab that I joined, which was the lab of Paul Barber, who actually, I had no idea. It's a very serendipitous and funny story, and it reminds me how small this world is. But Paul's work on the coral triangle was on an entire wall in the aquarium.
Oh, wow.
Like the whole
thing.
So
you knew it?
So I knew it, yeah.
Wow.
And I didn't realize until I went back. So I volunteered and then remember I said I went back to work. Someone went, they asked me like, oh, how's Paul? And I was like, this is weird.
How do you know Paul?
How do you know Paul?
Which Paul?
And yeah, so I thought it was funny. But basically there I studied how anthropogenic stress, which is a big word for how like human activity or human pollution impacts something. And I studied how that impacts the biodiversity of coral reef fish gut microbiomes.
Fun.
Yeah.
Do we give them IBS? Is that the answer? We must.
Basically, it does impact their, I believe, their biodiversity. But Sam came out with a paper not that long ago. I'd have to look for it.
Dang, I'm so smart.
But yeah, I mean, they did other work in the lab, like eDNA and stuff, but I mostly just did DNA extractions and went through the whole like pipeline of getting 16S. And then I learned how to, I even took a class at UCLA to learn how to sort through my 16S data and like make graphs out of them and stuff.
That. Cute. Look at you.
Yeah. So that's how I first got into research. And then also through the URC, I wasn't just volunteering in these labs. I was getting paid because I knew if I didn't get paid to do research, I'd have to get a job. And I don't know if I would have time to do research if I got a job. And if I did, I'd probably be stressed more than I was already. And I'm stressed all the time. So I did, I became a CARE fellow and later a CARE scholar and then later an IMSD scholar. And I got a raise every year.
Wow. I wish that could be us.
I went from working
wasn't. I got loans.
I'm sorry.
Wait, what's a CARE scholar? Did I miss
No.
She's just saying acronyms.
Yeah.
Like we know what they are.
Yeah, I keep forgetting what all these things. Okay, so PEERS is Program for Education and Excellence in the Research Science. Okay. Or something like that.
Wow.
And then BICEP was biomedical something. Anyways, it was just like an intro to science techniques and stuff and journal club, and we took that. And then CARE
journal club
is, I don't know if the acronym stands for anything, but basically it is a NIH funded program. That's funded to take on students and pay them for their research. And generally, like a lot of these programs, they're aimed towards URM students. So increasing the diversity of STEM and increasing the amount of URM students going into research. But I think the key for a lot of these programs is they were focused on recruiting us, but also the fact that they were paying us.
That helps so much.
It helps so much.
That's the thing that makes like, the difference.
It's what's retained me in research, I think.
We got rent to pay.
We did.
Okay, so you got paid during the school year. It sounds like there was a summer internship program, but you also did other summer internships.
Yeah, so my first summer of college, I took classes and I did BICEP. And then the next following summer, through the program director that was in charge of CARE Scholars, she nominated me to Tracy Johnson, who's now the dean of the biological sciences at UCLA, who nominated me for HHMI XROP, which stands for Howard Hughes Medical Institute.
You got
excellent research.
What's the X?
X, like excellent. Oh, yeah, like biggie, research opportunity program.
Xylophone.
Xylophone. Something excellent X-ray. Or XL.
Yes, for being an excellent researcher.
Yes.
Wow.
I try. I'm looking it up. Me not knowing any of these things, and they all gave me money.
It's okay.
Sorry. Let's just pull up your CV next time.
I'm exceptional.
Exceptional
research opportunities program. So basically, I apply to this. I get nominated. I apply to be a nominee, similar to what we did for Gilliam. I get the nomination. And then I later find out that I am picked to actually participate in the program. So HHMI is unlike the NIH in that it is not government funded. It's private funding. So that's cool. Which means it's just fancier or whatever.
Why did my brain go to like, you have to pay a different type of tax?
Oh, girl, the way I got taxed for my internship.
Bro, same. Florida snaps that money.
Sorry, continue.
It's okay. And then they matched me with an I picked a list of like 12 HHMI associated professors or investigators, sorry.
Yeah.
And then they were like, you're matched with this person. And so I got matched with Dr. Michael Laub. Michael Laub? Yeah.
I don't know. I think I read one of his papers. What do you do?
He studies a lot. I did call a doctor. Yeah.
Oh, I think we read one of his papers in QBio.
Oh, really? Oh, that wouldn't surprise me. Class. They also do two
reading. You weren't there.
They also do toxin antitoxin. They also do two
component system.
Yeah, they do a lot.
Mm. It's a big lot.
Me a bacteriologist. See, I'm pulling a Lanise. You have to go like this and say something amazing about yourself.
No, I don't. Wait. I like words of affirmation from others, but I don't do it well for myself.
I have a question. So when you do these like matching processes, like do you have an input from like previous trainees or like how do you even learn about these labs?
I just picked. I read them and I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. Okay, which is cool. Probably not the best way to do it.
I mean, it worked fine for you, but it I was like, fine. Did you choose like all microbiologists? Did you choose based on location? Choose based on like other types of projects?
Yeah, I think I chose like mostly on location because I was like, I want to get out of California because I didn't. Yeah. I stayed in California. I stayed really forever, close from home. Yeah. I think I generally had an interest in microbiology, but was like, I don't know. At the time I'm still a biochemistry major, right? I really didn't know. And I think it's because I'm so late in the game to scientific research, right?
You're so early.
I know. But I felt like I hadn't developed my identity as a scientist. Like I didn't know what I wanted to study. I was kind of just vibing, getting through, struggling in the biochem degree. And then I went to Mike's lab. And I worked on CRISPR interference, which is different from CRISPR. It's a type of gene editing where you don't delete a gene. You instead silence a gene. So it's still there. It's just you're blocking its transcription. And it's cool because you're able to like induce it and like just get rid of its inducer and allow the gene to then continue to once again be transcribed. But it's a system that you need to like test its efficiency and try out different CRISPR or Cas9s to see which one works, which one doesn't. So all of my time there was testing the efficiency of CRISPR in a particular bacteria called Colobacter crescentis. And I learned a lot. Like the way that they tested it was using several techniques. I learned how to use a microscope. I did qPCR.
Fun.
I ran many of Westerns, which now I do every week.
You can do in your sleep.
And I learned how to use a flow cy. Very simple though. Just sorting like how many copies of DNA were in the cells. Because the cells that I was looking at were essential for cell division. So if I silence them, cell division just
stops.
Cell division kept going, but it couldn't like... Cell replication could keep going, but it couldn't divide. So there was a lot of...
Big cells.
Polyploidy, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my first summer. And I was like, cool, this is fun. And I went back again for another summer. That's how much I liked it. And XROP, how it worked is that you... As long as you and the lab agreed that you could return, you could return. So I returned. And there was also other fancy things that we got to do. It's like HHMI has a headquarters. So they flew us out to their headquarters. Each year we were in the program so we could present our research. They paid for my boarding or like my housing at MIT when I was there and for my research and stuff like that. So it was a lot of fun. I got to go to... Bethesda, went to DC, and it was just kind of exposing me to the world, but also exposing me to science and specifically microbiology.
Did you feel like an Olympian representing the country of Norwalk? Was it like a campus like that? And you wear your like little tag with like where you're from, what you're studying?
But like, I didn't think I felt like an Olympian, but I think...
But you were
especially
like,
my second summer, I was like, holy crap. Because my second summer, I was also getting prepared to apply to grad school.
Yeah, that's so stressful.
I had kind of committed to, I don't think I want to be a pre-med, nor do I think I have the grades to be a pre-med. But I do like research, so let me try this PhD thing, I guess. But a lot of the reason why I didn't struggle between like deciding if I wanted to do a master's and a PhD was CARES, the program that funded me, mm-hmm. paid for my PhD application. So I was like, great, mm-hmm. I don't have to pay for that. It paid for my GRE. And I said, great, yeah. I don't have to pay for that. Mm-hmm. And if I went like straight through. So mm-hmm. I was like, a master's you do have to pay, and a PhD you get it's paid for, guys. Free. It's free.
They pay you. They
a also little bit.
Abuse you.
But so I think
great recruitment.
Economically, the PhD was better out for me.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like I felt like people valued me as a scientist because they were giving me all this money.
Yeah.
But it also made my imposter syndrome worse. I don't know. Really? Yeah. I think it's like I felt kind of like just pushed into this field. And I think that's when I
It wasn't really your choice. It's yeah. just like the ocean took you there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like, I guess in comparison to how I was learning before, like I felt very confident in what I learned and I could tell you what I learned, mm-hmm. And educate you. Like when I was at the aquarium. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in science,
I'm paying attention.
Yeah.
There's going to be a quiz at the end.
Yes. when I got into science, I don't know. I guess it's because there's so many questions out there. I really won't ever know the answer to all of them. Yeah. But I felt like all these people know more than me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like barely starting out.
You know what they don't know? How to tell the difference between a sea lion and a
exactly.
seal.
Exactly.
That so, is true. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They can humble themselves.
I agree. Yeah.
There's so much people don't know.
Yes. So it was weird. Yeah, that second summer was kind of difficult because, I don't know, applying to grad school was really intimidating to me. And I was like, also becoming to the realization of what academia is, right? Because for so long, academia was just like, college was like, this is where I'm going to go. This is where all the smart people are. And after this, I'm going to be one of the smart people. Mm-hmm. And going from Norwalk to UCLA, it was a culture shock. I was like... Everywhere I looked in Norwalk, I saw a brown person. Mm-hmm. That was not true at UCLA, and less true at MIT. Mm-hmm. So I think it was like coming to terms with really feeling like the odd one out. Mm-hmm. And being like, okay, I have to get comfortable with being the odd one out. And at that time, it was really struggling with it. And I think now I don't care as much. Or like, I know I am, and I... just want to make sure that the people that come after me don't feel that way.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. And up until that point, even like being a woman in science, I had never had my PI and my grad student mentor were men. Mm. But when I went to MIT, my direct mentor was a postdoc and she was a woman. And I was like, she was so cool. I don't know if she knew that she inspired me so much. Like she was very adamant about just being a good mentor and like making sure that she wasn't seen as less because she was a woman. Mm-hmm. Because despite what we want to hope for, there are people that think that out there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that lab was also like really social. We went out as a lab to lunch and my PI didn't do science, but he like walked around and was like, how are you doing? Making sure that we're doing okay.
Even PI didn't do science, grant writing all day.
Yeah, that's it. He was getting big bucks, so he was doing it well, I guess. And that's kind of when I was like, I really like this research. I'm just going to say bucket and switch to microbiology. I did.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed my microbio classes. So I'm really, really, really happy that I switched. At the time I was doing cell division research or related on that sense, like very specific to bacteriology. But through my major in microbiology, immunology, and molecular genetics, mouthful, I know. We also call it MIMG. I took a parasitology class, and that's when I was introduced to host pathogens, I think, at a very deep level. And I got really, really, really excited. It was like so cool to me studying like the host side and the pathogen side. And I don't know, these like little small things seem so smart to me. I know that they don't have brains, but they seem so smart. And I think working in Mike's lab allowed me to think in a very mechanistic way. And it's something that I was able to practice in those classes.
Yes.
And yeah, I think that's I think I would say I felt like a true scientist probably during my summers at MIT. So,
yay.
Yeah. Even though I was struggling with like being the odd one out, I think that's when I did feel like, okay, I do enjoy science. I do have a knack for science. And it's also where I grew, like as a person, like asking for help and being okay with not knowing the answer to things and knowing when to ask for help and knowing when to speak up, I guess, advocate for yourself. Yeah. And so I did the summer right before my senior year there. And then after that, I got ready to apply.
Wow. Seems very busy. Like you always had this and that and this and that. Like all throughout your college. And then you have your classes. Yeah. Then you have a social life.
I did. Like, I had a very nice social life. Although I was stressed. And I was taking a lot of classes and doing research. I think I did a pretty good job at, you know, still maintaining a social life, going out with friends. Towards the end of that, I did have a boyfriend and was able to still socialize with all of those people for the most part and like get my shit done kind of thing. Which is nice. But it was definitely stressful. The I'm stressed is something that I have continued on from undergrad.
Do you ever think you'll
slow down, stop being stressed?
Learn to manage that feeling.
No. I think it's like weird. I talked to someone else. No. I talked to someone else and I was like, even the amount that I vocalize of me being stressed.
Yeah.
Like that's only a third of my stress. A lot of it I keep to myself.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because I am always.
You must be real stressed. Yeah.
But I think, I don't know. I'm stressed, but I'm also like happy. I guess I talked to my parents and they're like, lab is stressful. I'm like, yeah. I was like, but lab also makes me happy.
Yeah.
Not only being like doing my project and stuff, but I don't know. I got lucky and I joined a very like just nice lab. I don't know. I enjoy, like they're my friends, the people I work with, from the undergrads to the, I'm very burpy today. Sorry. To the postdocs.
Yeah. Nice. They're so nice. Today I accidentally ran into them. Like I think like 15 of them were all eating lunch together on this like very iconic like steps at the student center. And some people actually were just having frozen yogurt for
lunch. That was our post lunch. we had lunch and then we shifted so to froyo.
It's giving Zoe 101.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just laid. Like on a walk with another friend and I said, oh, yep, that's the Doherty love.
We were just wasting time because we had to go to lecture. That was on that side of campus. UCSD's big. I was telling Brian, oof. At UCLA, I can get from one side of campus to the other in 10 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And here, I'm surprised. I don't think you could.
Because it's a small, like UCLA so condensed. Is big.
It's the smallest UC.
Dang. Mm-hmm. I walked a mile from the parking garage to my lab every day. Mm-mm. 20 minutes. Mm-mm. Called my mom the whole time.
Oh, you park on the main campus.
I called my mom when I'd walk to class.
Yeah, and then she'd be like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, just walking. That I call. Oh, so you call me because you have nothing else to do?
Or at night, she's like, you're calling me because your friends are asleep. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I also called my mom while I was driving. And she was like, I'm at work. What you need? And I'm like, nothing, just want to say hi. And she's like, I'm busy. Goodbye.
Yeah. Cute. And now we're here. And then if you want to hear the rest, just listen to the entire podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We go through it.
Dang, my entire life's documented in science anyway.
I love that.
That's how are so we on cute. Time? Oh, gosh. Sorry.
Yeah, I think we're
good.
Yeah, we're good.
Yay!
I think it's a natural end to, you know, your story. You went through everything. I mean, it's your whole life. We're never going to get through it in one episode.
No.
So,
yeah.
But I think that really puts a good context into, you know, like how you got here. And I think a lot of times the way people make decisions and the way that they think about things is so informed by like how they grew up and the environments they were in and the kinds of experiences they had. So
therapy.
Yeah. So it really, I think, sheds a light on, like, I don't know, like, you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, like, when I look at undergrads, even people who are, like, graduated and still trying to determine if they want to go to grad school. Right. Mm-hmm. There's a big fear of, like, oh, should I go straight through? Because that's obviously the choice. Mm-hmm. Whatever. But it's like, even though I went straight through from undergrad to grad school and from like high school to undergrad to grad school, mm-hmm. my path to research wasn't linear per se.
Yeah.
I was involved in lab often. Mm-hmm. But the entire time, I had no idea what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very uncomfortable feeling.
That is, yeah. People do not like feeling uncomfortable.
I don't like it. Yeah. But I think getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is something that can be applied to a lot of things in life.
A lot of things, yeah.
Now I'm uncomfortable.
Don't be uncomfortable.
Thinking about being uncomfortable.
Oh, no.
Although I can do anything with my, like, comfort blanket. So.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm.
Cute. So yeah, it's okay not to know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like people think everyone knows what they're doing. And the more I'm in grad school, the more I realize no one knows what they're doing. Mm-mm. The faculty doesn't know what they're doing. Mm-mm. Admin doesn't know what they're doing.
That's facts.
Like, people are just making decisions and then you ask them why they did that and they're like, I don't know. And you're like, okay, you don't know, I don't know, we're all here not knowing, we're chilling, like, whatever. Yeah, so that's nice. Okay, should we round up the show? Should we take a little break, do our ads?
Yes.
Okay, let's take a short break to hear from our sponsors.
Let's do it.
Canva Pro is a premium plan of Canva that comes with additional features, including unlimited storage for photos and assets. You can upload your own images and access millions of photos. You'll get exclusive access to 400,000 free photos, illustrations, and templates. Sign up and get a 30-day free trial with our link, so you can make cool things to put up on your walls or flyers to promote your events. And you can do this by going to this link. partner.canva.com/triplicates.
Chegg Study gives you access to homework help and allows you to look up answers to questions found in textbooks, which Chegg keeps as a database. You can also submit new questions to experts and get answers to them as little as 30 minutes. Use the code Chegg AFF5. That is all capital letters, CHEGGAFF5. For $5 off your first month of Chegg Study.
Sanit Factory is a Black-owned skincare brand that prides itself in providing natural homemade products. If you are a skincare buff and love to have the taste of luxury at home on a university budget, these products are for you. They have 3 scented exfoliating scrubs that are catered to your skin's needs. So as you head into another school year, having a scrub that not only nourishes your body, but helps you relax after a long day is a must. Use code TP10, capital T, capital P, the number 1, the number 0, for 10% off of your order on sainedfactory.com. And now, to round out our show, we're going to do some observations, run some stats on our data. Asama, what's the question of the week?
Okay, so the question of the week is going to be a little bit controversial. So, like, please don't take anything personally.
Okay.
Breakfast or dinner food?
Like, which one's better, right? Yeah.
Okay, well, you can have breakfast for dinner. You can't have dinner for breakfast.
Okay, yeah, well...
You can have pizza for breakfast all the time, though. So
some people have
exception.
Dinner for breakfast if they eat, like, similar things.
Yeah.
What are you guys eating for breakfast?
Like, a lot of... I don't know. Like, we make beans. Like, we eat beans for breakfast. Mm, or, like, chilaquiles. Oh. You can have for breakfast. And they're, like, technically a breakfast food, but I have them for dinner.
And, like,
time.
With Thai food, you can eat literally any meal for, like, any dish.
Or, like, Filipino food.
So is there any divide between breakfast and dinner? What are you even saying?
I guess it's assuming that you think there's a binary.
There's not.
Dun, 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 dun.
Wow. I think, though, so not our ally bringing up a binary. Okay, what's the divide of breakfast and dinner food in Thailand? Well, usually breakfast food is more like mild, not as spicy or doesn't have as much like curry and
flavor. But is it like the same base? Like, are you eating the same things just like with different seasoning?
No, it's like, okay, all so different things.
Breakfast is different than dinner. I'm trying to understand where you're coming from.
I think it depends on the person.
Okay.
I will say there's no difference.
Okay. So how do you pick if breakfast is better than dinner?
You wake up and you're like, what do I want to eat?
Okay, and you just eat anything. Yeah. And I support that.
Okay. Like, I would be having, green curry for breakfast.
And that's totally fine.
And an omelet.
I just don't know how we're going to run stats on these feelings.
I do.
Okay, give it to me. Lanise, give us our stats.
Okay. So since we're so divided on what is breakfast, what is breakfast and what is dinner food, and if there's a real difference, I think that the stats I'm running today is that 100% of the PhD students in our study are against the binary.
Oh, I love that she set this up and now she gets to deliver this line.
As no one disagrees.
Did you hear that?
I think those are correct.
Okay, yeah. So thank you for that beautiful stat question mark.
You're welcome.
But as always, if you want to hear a topic from us or have an idea, please let us know.
And you can do that by finding us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at triplicatespod. And you can email us at triplicatespod@gmail.com. If you like us, support us on patreon.com/triplicatespod. And with that,
obrigada y chao.
Gracias y adiós.
Kapunka. Bye.
I forgot how to say thank you and bye in Spanish.